You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 384. We're going to talk about the spring game. Had a lot of fun while we were out there. Randall's joining me as well over Skype. Randall, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
And over the weekend, we got to meet Solon, who's been writing articles for us now for getting close to half a year now. I forget exactly when it started, but was writing during the season and actually has a new article out about his thoughts on the spring game. You can find that over at irishsportstalk.net. And if you click over on the news page, you'll see that his article, if you're listening to this anyway, close to when it's released, his article is the most recent one. So his thoughts on Notre Dame and talking mostly talking about the offense as far as that goes. So, Randall, I was able to rewatch part of the game again, and it was good to see. I had a lot of fun just watching the game. It was nice weather. It wasn't sweaty hot. It was cool at times and warm at other times, depending if the sun was behind clouds or not. So I think the easiest way to do this would just be to go through position by position and just talk about some things that stood out to us. Will that work for you?
Yeah, that would work great. I do say we should have got paid a little bit for advertising for the weather app that I used last week, since it was right on compared to all the other weather reports that were out there. So we might have to talk to them about sponsoring the show.
What was that app again?
Wonderground is the name of it.
With a U or with an O on the Wonder?
U-U-N-D-E-R ground. Wonderground.
All right, very good. I'll need to check that out. I don't use it, but I might need to start. Okay. Let's start with the offense. And it was pretty much, it was set up with the blue score was the number one offense versus the number one defense, and the gold score was the number two offense versus the number two defense. And I'm hearing an echo, Randall. Are you hearing an echo?
Yeah, sorry, my computer went to sleep on me there, so it cut out a little bit.
All right, I don't hear it anymore, so I think we're all good. So I like to look at it more. I don't care if the blue one or the gold one. I'm more curious and was more interested in seeing how the ones did against the ones and how the twos did against the twos. So definitely the number one offense, the blue team, versus the number one defense came out and they scored a touchdown on the opening drive. And I thought, well, man, this is kind of what I expected and what I was worried would be. And I know this is a spring game. Nothing really matters. But still, it's hard not to put at least a little bit of faith into what you're seeing out on the field. But after that, the defense really, the number one defense anyway, really showed up and did a good job of containing the offense. But we're primarily going to talk about the offense, I guess. So let's start with the quarterback position. We saw a lot of Brandon Wimbush and a lot of Ian Book out there. Randall, I know when we were watching the game and talking about it, you were really impressed with Ian Book, but I just mentioned, my takeaway was, well, he's going against the number two defense as well. But what were your thoughts on the two quarterbacks that were playing?
Well, to sum it up, I don't think there's any kind of quarterback controversy at all, let's put it that way. But I was impressed with Book. I think going into the spring game, Wimbush was overhyped and Ian Book was underhyped, you could say. So we've heard people ranting and raving about how great Wimbush is, and so we were expecting a lot out of him, and I think all the fans were. And then, you know, Ian Book is just kind of written off as a guy that be fighting for a backup position, and he was a three-star quarterback coming in. And so I think he surprised a lot of people by how well he did play. I mean, yeah, he was going against the backup defense, but he also had the backup offensive line receivers on his side. So
and kind of big picture before I get more into specifics about the quarterbacks, it was clear to me that overall the depth of the offense is ahead of the depth of the defense, and I thought that was just clear by how easily or how often the number two offense was able to score. And they've been doing great recruiting at the offensive line position is very deep, and the receivers are pretty deep, including the tight ends are pretty deep as well. But, okay, as far as the quarterbacks, I know that we've heard just how Brandon Wimbush is very fast, and he was. There was one run in particular that the defensive player, and now I forget if it was a linebacker or if it was a defensive back, but the defensive player clearly had the angle on him, and Brandon was able to turn the corner and pick up about 4, maybe even 5 extra yards. And this was, you know, if he would have been touched, he would have been, it would have been a tackle. So it wasn't like he had even a bigger disadvantage as far as that goes. But I was really impressed with the speed that he showed. And he does have great arm strength and zip on the ball. As far as Ian Book, I was really impressed. He did seem to make quick decisions and got the ball out of his hands very quickly. And Solon mentioned this in his article. The one thing that he still needs to get better arm strength, and that might come with time. But there were a couple times when throwing the ball deep down the field, when if he would have either made the throw sooner or if he would have been able to put more velocity on the ball, it probably would have gotten to the receiver in time. But because it didn't, the defensive player had time to get his hands on the ball. It didn't necessarily end up in an interception, but it did result in an incomplete pass.
Yeah, and I think going back to Wimbush, you know, he was kind of hindered in this game as far as, you know, as soon as Embo was close to him, it was considered a sack or a tackle. And so that's where he shines, is running the ball, and he would have been able to break through some of that. Like, they wouldn't, in a live game action, he would not have been sacked or tackled, and he would have been able to make a big play out of it. But on the other side, you got to be able to do more than just, yeah, I know that's what makes him so great, running the ball, but he's also got to throw the ball. And he made some very, very good throws, and then others he made some just, you were wondering what he was trying to do or who he was even throwing to.
Okay, he had 2 interceptions, and the one bounced off the pads of Alize Mack, and we'll get into that. And it was maybe not a great decision because the defender was able to close and get his hands on Alize and the ball as Alize was catching it. So it would have been a very tough catch to make, and it ricocheted off his body. And I believe that's one that Jalen Elliott intercepted then. And I believe Coleman was there on the tackle or the hit on Alize Mack. Do you remember that for sure, Randall?
I don't remember exactly who it was.
I think that's right. But then the other one was in the end zone, and I don't remember who he was throwing it to, but it
there
was
that close.
Go ahead.
It wasn't anybody that close. I mean,
we're still not sure who he was throwing it to. Well, there was someone in the end zone, but it was a nice ball. But it was just to the wrong player.
Yeah, and that might have been on Book. They had another interception that was actually brought back, and was considered a sack. That was with Book. But yeah, if you go back and look at the history of the blue goal game, I mean, the backup quarterbacks always seem to have the best days, and obviously they're going against second team. It was Lou Somogyi, the historian at Blue and Gold. He pointed out that, you know, Nate Montana had 18 completions for 233 yards and 3 touchdowns over Dane Chris in 2010. Andrew Hendricks had the best numbers in 2012, and he was a 4th team quarterback. And you know, Malik Zaire was the star when Everett Golson was here. Everybody knew Golson would be the starter, and Malik Zaire had an amazing game. And so it does seem to be in favor of the backup quarterback. They always look good. Mm-hmm. And even in last year, Brian Van Gorder I mean, not Brian Van Gorder. Montgomery Van Gorder, Gummy, actually looked great.
But yeah, he looked better than Kaiser.
They did a good job not giving him any reps in this game. Wimbush is your number one quarterback. Ian Book is your number two. And so those two guys need all the reps they can get because neither one of them, I mean, Wimbush has a couple plays in the actual game and Book has none. So you got to give those guys all the reps they can get. And I think Ian Book was one of the most improved players in spring. At the beginning of spring, you know, it was kind of battling for the seconds or the backup position with Van Gorder, but he's definitely the number two guy. And I think he's surprised a lot of people. And I feel more comfortable with the backup quarterback situation than I did before the spring.
I agree. I do too. And I was one of the guys, one of the fans who did write off Ian Book, thinking that all he'd ever do would just be fighting for that number two spot. And he may never be the starter, but I think we can feel pretty confident that if he is called upon, he'll be able to lead the offense and at least do a good, solid job of leading the offense. He might not be dynamic, but I think he'll be. I don't think he'll be a liability.
Well, like Brian Kelly pointed out after the game, you know, they've used the number two quarterbacks quite a bit at Notre Dame. So up to this point, you don't really like thinking about it, but it does kind of work in the favor. I mean, it does look like Ian Book would have a chance to get quite a bit of playing time. I mean, that's just how it's worked out in other years. Last year, I believe, was the first year that we had a starting quarterback from start to finish, even though he got benched. But as far as being able to, Brian Kelly often, even at Cincinnati, often went through multiple quarterbacks.
Okay, let's talk about the offensive line, and then we'll get to the other skilled positions on offense. Offensive line for the first team, I thought looked pretty good. On the second team, I thought the defense was able to stuff the inside runs pretty consistently. Dexter Williams did have a huge run on the inside, but there was a missed tackle there, and he made a great play. But overall, even against the ones, I thought that the interior, or I guess that would be more about the defense, but I guess I'll just say it now. I did think that the defense was solid versus the offensive line on interior runs. Not great, but solid. And then in pass protection, they definitely, and I know this is a spring game, and it's against a quarterback that has a red jersey that can get sacked, air quotes, just by being touched. But they definitely were able to make Wimbush move in the pocket. And there was a few times when they did have success against the run, too. So offensive line, I thought, did a solid job, but I didn't think that they completely handled the defensive line.
Well, that's a little bit concerning because the offensive line is supposed to be great this year. And the defensive line, you know, we don't really know what we have there. And obviously, the defensive line is very much improved, but I don't think they're that improved. And they were able to get some moves on guys like McClinchy and Nelson. I think it was Jay Hayes, you know, a guy that's hardly played, stunned McClinchy on one play. And the thing is, this should be easier for the offensive line because the defense isn't – yeah, they're going – I don't know if you could say 100% because they can't actually hit the quarterback. So yeah. They can't completely be going full bore. But and then like Drew Tranquil, he put a move on Nelson that Baffin got around him in a hurry. And so those are your two leadership guys that is not – they did good, but they're not – I'm not going to say that they're they've got a lot of work to do.
They do, but this is one thing I do think is important to note. Elko said that pretty much the defense has been practicing against the offensive system that Notre Dame will be playing. So, and it's going to change a little bit from week to week as they prepare for the more intricate parts of the opponent's offense, whereas this spring they've been going and preparing and practicing against Notre Dame style offense. And so I do think that does give an edge to the defense. They know a little bit what the offense is going to be like. And so I do think that was maybe part of the reason that the offense struggled, is because they didn't have as much of the surprise factor there.
Yeah, it's just again, one of those areas where you can say they're maybe a little overhyped, because there's this talk of McClinchy and possibly Nelson, you know, both being, you know, first or second round picks, you know, so you got two of those guys on the line. And when you look at it like that, you're like, oh, nobody should be getting past them, especially this defensive line. So I think it's one of those situations where they've been maybe hyped up too much. And it just kind of, you know, I think they'll be great this fall, but they definitely need to have all the reps they can get this fall. And I don't want guys taking off like they supposedly did with Hunter Bibben, you know, because he's an experienced guy. They need to get the guys that are going to play need to get the reps.
Are you ready to talk about tight ends and wide receivers?
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. Well, I would just, like I said, McClinchy didn't have a false start. Mustafer didn't snap over somebody's head, so they're down.
So there is improvement. Do you remember, did McClinchy have a false start in the spring game last year?
No, I don't remember.
I'm thinking he did, but I don't remember. I don't remember for sure. Okay, let's talk about wide receivers and tight ends, and we'll put these together because the tight ends are playing quite a lot detached from the offensive line. So there's two things that really surprised me about Notre Dame's offense, two things that we've heard about all spring, but two things that I decided I wouldn't believe until I see it. And the one was how many two tight end sets will we see in, and two running back sets will we see in Notre Dame's offense. And we saw quite a bit, especially with the first team, the blue team, there was quite a bit more. And I think that's probably because they didn't put as many of the tight ends over on the white team. But we saw a lot of two tight end sets, and a couple times we saw some two running back sets. And the other thing that surprised me, not necessarily relating to tight ends, is the tempo. There was times throughout the game that Notre Dame definitely went tempo. They started out with tempo, and there was a few times throughout the game where they were pushing the ball. And I'm glad to see that. And I know it's not September yet, but I do believe those two things are going to be part of Notre Dame's offense.
Yeah, and before we keep going with the tight ends, Alize Jones has officially, according to a Notre Dame spokesperson, he's officially changed his name to Alize Mack as of last week. I want to do a little more digging on that and why he chose that. I don't know if his mom's name was Mack, why he came up with that, but I personally like Alize Jones better than Mack. But
I agree. As far as the sound, I like the ring and the sound of Alize Jones, but maybe there's a good reason that he changed his name.
Yeah, but the first play of the game was shocking. We saw two tight ends go out there, and it was a pass to the tight end. Durham Smythe caught a pass, and so right there that should give fans some hope that the tight ends will actually be part of the game plan this year and that they can actually produce.
Even Lua Tua caught a pass.
Yeah, he was detached from the line on the one play. So I was kind of surprised to see that. I figured he's just in there as a blocker, but I know he's been working on his passing game, and maybe he's doing quite a bit better with that.
They use the tight ends in motion quite a bit. Even when if they were going out for the pass, they used them, at least Alize Jones, they used him far down the field on some deep routes. So I do think tight ends are going to be a huge part of this offense. And Chip Long preaches about, you know, this is a, I forget exactly, but he mentions this is a pro-style play-action offense. And that isn't exactly what he said, but pretty much the big part of it was play-action. Well, in order for play-action to work, you need to be able to run the ball. And even though I don't think that running the ball is maybe as high of a priority as a lot of fans think it is, I do think it's higher than it was last year.
Yeah, I think they will need to run the ball quite a bit. But the first thing you or I noticed at least was when the first team offense went out there is that you have these two big tight ends running out there, and then the three starting receivers. You got EQ Boykins and Chase Claypool, and you got Alexander Durham-Smythe, and they're all massive. I mean, you look at that, and there's no way that they can cover all those guys. And somebody is going to get open on every play. Just put all five of those guys out there, and somebody will be open, you know, even if it's over shorter cornerbacks. It's going to be very hard to cover these guys or cover all of them. So you see that, and it's pretty impressive.
It is. I do think one of the questions has been, well, who's the number two wide receiver? Because more and more it looks like there isn't as much going to be a slot receiver. There probably is. I mean, they will have three receiver sets out there, definitely. But I do think that the main formation is going to be two wideouts and then two tight ends, or maybe Chase Claypool in there too, kind of in that slot / tight end position. So who do you think is going to be that primary target at wide receiver? Because I think I know who it is, at least leaving spring. I think it's pretty clear.
Well, yeah, I still think EQ is your number one guy, and Miles Boykin can be number two. And Chase Claypool actually tweeted out a picture after the game of those three guys, and I'm sure exactly what he said, but some of the effect, you know, that, you know, last year they were backups going to the spring game, and this year they're the three starting wide receivers. So even they as a team know that those are the three main guys.
I think that, yeah, EQ is probably going to be that number two for a while. But I love what you get with Chase Claypool. The athleticism, the physicality, and not to say that Boykin isn't physical or athletic, but Chase Claypool is different.
Who do you have as number one?
Well, EQ, yeah. Definitely EQ.
I thought you said number two. But.
Well, yeah, I did. At number two, I mean, between, I think Boykin is the guy, but I think that maybe by the end of the year, Claypool, I think he just is so dynamic that he could maybe sneak up and end up having as many catches or as many targets as Boykin does. And then we need to talk about Stefferson. He did have a huge catch, and I'm still not sure what's going to happen when this fall rolls around. He definitely offers something the other guys don't. He does have elite high-end speed that he can just pull away from defensive backs that I don't think you get with the other guys. But there's a reason that he's on the third team. And there was during the blue and gold game, you didn't see it on replay or if you were watching it on TV, but on one of the special teams formations, he was late in getting out.
No, it was not special teams. That was the offense.
It was? I thought it was a special teams play.
No, it was the offense, because I think right after that he did have a big play where he was weaving through traffic and made a catch.
Okay, maybe it was on offense, but either way, late. He was coaches were yelling at him to get onto the field, and he was running onto the field as the ball was snapped. I just don't think that they were. I don't know why a flag wasn't thrown, because it looked like he was running over on the defensive. Yeah, he wasn't even across the line of scrimmage yet when the ball was snapped.
That just shows me that he is not engaged, and that's why I think that there's something going on, and he's not convinced that, I hate saying it, but I'm not convinced he's going to be playing next year.
It worries me, and it's sad because they really could use him, because he brings something unique to the wide receiver position.
Yeah, you saw that, especially weaving through traffic. I mean, that's something a smaller guy can do. I mean, we saw Chase Claypool do it. You know, as a big guy, he can make some serious moves. But it is nice to have that smaller receiver that can weave through traffic and get some plays. It's not all about size.
Javon McKinley was another receiver that I was really impressed with his size and his just explosiveness. He did have a red jersey on. And that's another guy that I do think has a lot of talent. I'm not sure how he's been doing as far as consistency or catching the football. But toughness, I don't think, is a question, because Brian Kelly has said that even though he has a red jersey on, usually they're more worried about him hurting other players than himself getting hurt, because he plays very physical.
Yeah, he wasn't too happy about the one where he got, they called it a tackle, you know, since they weren't allowed to hit him, because he was pretty convinced he could have made a big play out of it. But then when you have those big guys and then you see Chris Fink out there, and you realize how small he is.
And he does have nice speed as well.
Yeah. Right now I see it's going to be hard for him to get out there on the field. There's a lot of receivers. And then you got, who knows what you have with Eddie Canteen coming in. He was there on the sideline for the game, but he's always not showing up till June. But there's a lot of talent there, and which is good, because these guys got to play their best if they want to get out on the field.
Well, and we haven't even mentioned, after the Texas game, this was, besides EQ, this was probably the player I was most optimistic and excited about, was CJ Sanders. And he did play on Saturday. I believe he had a touchdown. But he was also with the second team unit. And from what I've been hearing, he's behind Chris Fink when it, as far as getting onto the field.
Yeah,
he will get on the field in special teams. Yeah. He did field punt, so he will get on the field. But I don't think he'll, unless he turns it on this fall and impresses the coaches, he'll probably be behind Chris Fink.
Yeah, you might be right on that.
Randall, one other consideration. Okay, I know that we think that there's something wrong with Stefferson, and there's something wrong with C.J. Sanders, because he looked so dynamic at the beginning of last year against Texas. He looked so dynamic. But the one consistent thing about the starting wide receivers and the receivers that Brian Kelly has been praising is their size. And we know that the tight ends have kind of poached that slot position. And so maybe it is more the kind of the player body types that this offense is looking for than it is issues with Stefferson or with CJ Sanders getting onto the field. Now, I don't think that's the case, but I thought that is one argument that maybe could be made.
Maybe, but I don't really think it is. I think Sanders' big thing is just his consistency. Even with on special teams last year, you know, ball security, it doesn't take much to get your reps taken away and give another player, because there are some good receivers on the team. And so, like I said earlier, you got to be playing your best if you want to get out there. And if you show any kind of inconsistency or dropping passes or anything like that, ball security, you're not going to get out on the field.
I feel like Brian Kelly and maybe all the coaching staff should have a shirt that Adam Carolla, a podcast comedian, sells. Or maybe it's a coffee mug. But either way, there should be a t-shirt. And he has this slogan where he tells the guys who work for him, he tells them, don't do your best, do my best. And I feel like that's Brian Kelly, and Brian Kelly could maybe use a t-shirt like that, or maybe a coffee mug.
You should send him one. Okay. While you're talking about Brian Kelly, he was out on the field. Like, usually he was standing at midfield watching the game. That was his view of the game. I don't know what all he was watching for, but he wanted to see it from, I guess, in front of the offense, or no, behind the offense, in front of the defense. He wanted to have a different view at everything. And it was different to see other coaches in the huddles with the players, and Brian Kelly wasn't there. He was kind of, you know, walking around doing other stuff and wasn't in the main in the huddles with the offense.
And he didn't have a headset on.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously this is just spring game practice, whatever you want to call it.
Did you catch that, Randall? And it was interesting that he didn't have a headset on. And after, in the press conference, he said that, well, he wanted to let he has confidence in, I mean, this isn't a quote, but he has confidence in his coaches, and he's going to let them coach pretty much.
Yeah, so there is definitely a change going on there.
Okay, we've got one more position group, the running backs. I think a lot of fans are very confident in this group. We've got Josh Adams, Dexter Williams, Tony Jones Jr., and Deion McIntosh as well. Josh Adams, just like give a couple thoughts into each of these guys. Toughness, breaks tackles, isn't afraid of running hard. Dexter Williams, incredible speed. I mean, this guy has breakaway speed. And then Tony Jones Jr., kind of, it reminds me a little bit more of Josh Adams, not the speed of Dexter Williams, but still a hard runner. And from according to Brian Kelly or one of the coaches, probably the best running back pass catcher on the team. So each of these guys run hard, and I think that they're going to rack up some pretty big numbers this fall.
Yeah, Josh Adams did his thing, you know, just racking up the yards. All of a sudden, he has quite a few yards, and you wonder how he got all of them. I would maybe describe Dexter Williams as having, you know, he has good speed, but he has like a second gear. Like, he had patient a couple of those runs. He was patient, and all of a sudden, when he saw the gap, when he saw the hole to run through, he had another gear that was incredible to see. I mean, it was just like flipping a switch and he was gone. So definitely like seeing that patience. I think maybe, you know, before last year he was too eager to try to make that big play instead of just being patient and letting the play develop around him. But it feels good to have three guys that are this good. Tony Jones, you know, played pretty good. I said he would be the MVP. I don't think he was the MVP, but he did play very well. And then I think, didn't Deion McIntosh have a touchdown?
I don't remember if he had a touchdown, but...
But anyways...
actually, yeah, he did.
I think he only had, what, 3 carries for 5 yards? I mean, he didn't run a whole lot, but, you know, he did get some reps. He is back at running back, obviously, with the stacked wide receiver group. And then C.J. Holmes, the freshman running back, he was there on the sideline. You know, we saw his arm in a sling. And it sounds like his shoulder surgery or his shoulder injury was a little more severe maybe than thought. And it's going to be, well, Solon actually talked with his dad on the flight home, and his dad isn't too sure. It looks like he'll likely redshirt this next year just because of the injury, you know, and he won't be ready to go until this fall, and that might be too late to try to. Well, I mean, even if he was healthy, he'd have a hard time getting on the field with this running back group,
exactly,
in my mind.
But, yeah.
But injury did kind of, you know, they didn't have to decide that. It seems like the injury kind of took care of that.
Okay. Let's move over to the defense then. Defensive line, we kind of touched on this a little bit. I thought that for the most part, they did a decent job, and this is maybe more the defense as a whole, against the inside runs. Dexter had a huge run, and even Josh Adams' touchdown run, which was, I don't remember, 20 or 30 yards. Those were inside runs, but there was quite a few times when the defense was able to stop the inside runs for little or no gain. And definitely the Dalen Hayes, and I know this was just sacks by touching the quarterback, but he was able to get some pressure on the quarterback, and that was impressive and good to see.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say about the whole defense, but yeah, you can definitely tell that these guys are in better shape and more athletic than they have been other years. The guys, especially the defensive linemen that were looked at as projects before. I mean, you know, Tiasem, Dutredway, you know, some of those guys before, they just looked like big guys. I mean, that they were basically football players because they were big. Well, now they actually look athletic. They actually look like they should be out competing on the football field. And just the whole defense just swarming to the ball. I mean, I think we talked about it before the game. You know, that's one thing we wanted to see and kind of what we expected, you know, would show us how good the strength and conditioning is, you know, how quickly they get to the ball. And I think it definitely showed in this game. And just, it's good to see these guys in shape and actually see the difference.
All right, and let's talk about linebackers. And go ahead.
Oh, well, with the defensive line, Dalen Hayes is, I think he's finally the guy we've been waiting for as far as a pass rush. He was making some incredible moves and getting to the quarterback. And I think with Elko, with his scheme stuff, I think Dalen Hayes is going to, it is going to be that knight in shining armor for the defense.
Okay, let's talk about the linebackers. Let's include the Rover in this group as well. Tranquil, he was with the ones at the Rover position and had a couple great plays. Didn't drop in coverage often, but when he was in coverage, it was usually against a tight end, which he's able to, for the most part, athletically keep up with the tight ends, and had some plays in the backfield and looked really solid. Did you see Niles Morgan? I didn't really notice him that much, but it didn't look like he was giving up a ton of plays either. And then Greer Martinez as well. Did you have thoughts on that group, Randall?
Well, I thought the linebackers did pretty good. We saw them getting pressure on the quarterback. I mean, it's good to see the linebackers move around, be able to do stuff like that. I know when Greer Martini would have been a live game, he would have crushed the quarterback. I think it was him and Morgan kind of switched after the play started, and he had a wide open gap and came charging through there. And whatever quarterback was back there, I don't care who it was, he would have crushed him. And even what Drew Tranquil was doing at the rover position, that's where he's needed to play. That's where we've wanted to see him for a long time. Even back when we had Ryan Thiel on the podcast a few years ago, you know, he said that's where he should be, and it's finally happening. You can see
he's so much more natural when he at this position than he was as a safety.
And he can be confident doing it. I mean, he could play. He survived at the safety position, but he didn't have the confidence there because he knew he could get burned. Mm-hmm. And watching Drew Tranquil, even on the sideline, he's got some serious swagger. And just the way he walks around, it's funny watching him on the sideline. He's out there punching, pretending like he was punching one of the girls that was bringing the water girls, or, you know, they were standing on the sideline. I mean, he was out there having fun, and just the way he walks, he's a very confident player. And I think it's even more so now that he's playing that rover position and can do what he's doing. I mean, in my opinion, he was the MVP of the defense.
He definitely seemed to be in on a lot of plays. Okay, let's talk about defensive backs, cornerbacks, and safeties. Nick Coleman definitely seems to be fitting in very well at safety. And I thought the defensive backs, they did force a couple interceptions, and that's better than a couple interceptions per game is better than what we have been experiencing. And the defense, and I know sacks aren't necessarily the same thing, but definitely being able to come up with some interceptions is pretty key. And I thought they did a good job for the most part. If they didn't get the interception, there was guys who were able to break up the pass, and then there was guys nearby, if not getting the interception, at least close enough to make a play on the ball.
Yeah, I was a little worried on one of the – I think it was the first drive when Josh Adams – I think that's when he ran for his touchdown. He had a long run, and we saw those guys missing tackles. I mean, it happened a couple times. Like, oh, great. This is what we've been seeing.
That was – yeah, the opening drive is when he had his 30-yard touchdown run, and it was Jalen Elliott that missed that that tackle.
Coleman did as well on that. Elliott and Coleman both missed on that. And then, so it was a little worried, which obviously is Josh Adams. So he's going to make them look worse than what they actually are. But it did seem to get better after that. There weren't as many as I was afraid of after that first drive. They got some stuff to work on. Nick Coleman, when Boykin had a big gain, I think it was like a 30-yard gain, he never turned around and looked for the ball. That's one thing I noticed. I hate when cornerbacks do that. And safety, like defensive back, you got to turn around and look for that ball. I mean, that's when they get called for pass interference, and it usually doesn't end up well.
There was one stud, I believe it was Studstill. Ian Book threw the pass to either CJ Sanders or maybe it was Fink, and he was late in throwing the ball. It was down the side on a go route, and the ball got there in the end zone. And if I'm pretty sure it was Stud, so if he would have turned his head sooner, he would have had the pick. I mean, he was in position. He just didn't look soon enough for the ball. Didn't find the ball, but he would have been able to make a play on it.
One thing that I was very impressed with was Isaiah Robertson, a true freshman, early enrollee. He was playing very physical. And he's a big guy. He should still be in school. He's technically a senior in high school. But he had some big hits. And then basically, I know after
it would have been ejected for the one.
Oh, the helmet to helmet?
Yeah.
Yes, that. I don't think I've ever heard a hit like that watching a game. But he got up and was in a couple plays later. And he would have actually had an interception. He did intercept the ball, but then they ruled that the quarterback had been sacked, so that was a pretty impressive catch, diving catch for an interception. But that definitely made me feel better about the, I guess maybe the future, the safety position, the depth there, because we got a couple more freshmen. We got another freshman coming in at safety, but with him, he looked very good, and I think he's gonna be starting down the road at some point.
Even though. Yeah, the defensive backs didn't turn maybe as much as we would have wished. It did seem that when the ball was tipped, there was more often than not someone nearby or close enough to make a play on it and try to either pick it off or at least get very close to picking it off.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they have Drew Tranquil at the Rover. I know we've talked about that this spring, should they move in there because safety depth, but you got to get your best guys on the field, and I think it's more important to have Drew Tranquil on the field at the Rover than it is to have him to add safety depth or have guys on the bench that might otherwise. I mean, playing instead of being on the bench. Like, don't worry about safety depth. Get your best guys out on the field.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our long snapper did a good job.
We didn't hear his name, so that's definitely a positive thing.
And our walk-on kicker also did a good job. Had kicks, at least two field goals over 40 yards, and several extra points.
Yeah, and Yoon, I wonder how bad his injury is, because I don't think he practiced at all this spring. He didn't kick in the game. So I guess that's something to watch this summer, which we probably won't really find out. But, he didn't have an injury, and I think he had surgery. I'm not sure what all happened there, but he hasn't been practicing.
Okay. All right. That's all I've got. Randall, do you have anything more?
Tyler Newsome didn't look the same without his hair, long hair. Just seemed different. He had some good punts. He had some bad ones, but hey, spring game. It was a practice, so, there's going to be good and there's going to be bad. And I think we're down to 131 days until the Temple game. So it's not that far off, but, yeah, a little bit of a drought, I guess you could say. But if you do want to know what the countdown is, Brian Kelly's son, forget what his name is tweet every day. He tweets out the countdown, so he's been doing a pretty good job of that.
All right, very good. That's all we've got. Thank you guys for yeah, Randall.
Oh, I was just quick going to mention the draft is Thursday night. Brian Kelly and Kaiser are planning to be there, which I still think is a bad idea because I don't think Kaiser's going to get picked in the first round.
You don't think he'll get picked. I still think that he'll get picked in the first round, but we'll see on Thursday.
Yeah, we'll find out. The only other news, Sean Crawford put out a post on Instagram, I think it was on Sunday after the game, that he's been fully cleared and is completely healthy again. So he has successfully come back from two injuries, and he's good to go. So,
if he comes back with the same attitude that he had the last 2 years, I do think he'll be able to get in a position to get on the field this fall. He's one of the guys, even with Brian Van Gorder's defense, he was able to pick it up and find his way onto the field. And so I'm pretty optimistic and hopeful that he'll be able to do the same this fall.
One question I'm going to ask you before that we can end on this is, so we didn't like Brian Van Gorder's complicated system, but now we're all hoping that Elko can come up, can use scheme to get sacks and put quarterback pressure on this team.
Well, it starts with being the fundamentals of tackling, because if you can't tackle, it doesn't matter how great your blitzes are, you're not going to take the guy down behind the line of scrimmage. So if you don't have fundamentals, you can have the greatest scheme in the world and it won't matter.
I agree. It's just fun to think about it that we wanted a less complicated, but now we want a system that is complicated enough to confuse the other team to get so that we can get sacks.
Maybe it wasn't the complicated part. Maybe it was more that Van Gorder and his position coaches weren't able to teach what they needed to do, what the players needed to do.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it.
So that's all we've got. Thank you guys for listening. If you enjoy this, share it with a friend. And check back next Monday for another podcast. We'll recap the NFL draft, see where Kaiser went, see who was right, Randall or I. And until then, go Irish.
Go Irish.